As a leader, the world needs you to show up. Your business, in my opinion, should be used for redemptive purposes to make the world a more whole and healthy place. And in order for your business to do that, you as the leader have to be working towards that.
Welcome, friends, to our latest episode of the Overflowing Life podcast, where we navigate the crossroads of modern leadership, authentic living, and the redemptive power of business. I'm your host, Chris Lagarde.
Well, this is it, the finale of our very first season. In this episode, we'll take a moment to reflect on the season, along with sharing updates on what we've learned since these recordings began about 6 months ago. Adrian and I discuss how we've incorporated these ideas and practices into our lives and businesses, and we make sure to answer some of the questions you've sent our way. Plus, some exciting news. Starting in May of 2024, join me for a weekly coaching hour starting at 4 p.m. Eastern, where we all can dive deeper into these topics and perhaps even get into some personalized coaching. And did I mention it was free? Make sure to join me. Well, here we go. Welcome to the Overflowing Life podcast. This is our final episode of season one. And man, it's been a long road, but it hasn't. You know, Adrian, it's been a while since we recorded our original episodes. We recorded those back in the fall of 2023. And as we record this, it's the spring of 2024. And I wanted to catch up with you. I wanted to kind of give some updates on some things we've learned, answer some, you know, questions that folks have posed, and just kind of do a wrap up on the entire season. So, how are you?
Hi, Chris. I'm doing great. And as you said, time is a weird thing because it does feel like our original recordings were forever ago, but yet just yesterday. And I think with how busy we are with the families and work and our coaching business, time just flies by. So it just is, it's an interesting concept, time and feeling how long ago it was and yet not so long ago.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, you could be listening to this right after you listen to the first episode. And so no time has passed for you as the listener, but for us, it's been a little while. And so since we first, I mean, I started researching, you know, some of the things that we talked about early 2023 and summer of 2023. And I've continued to do a lot of research because it's central to how I coach and what I coach to and the leaders that I coach. And so I just wanted to give some updates on some things and again, like I said, answer maybe a few questions that some folks have posed. And so, so if it's okay with you, Adrian, I'd love to just kind of give some updates on the problem. And before, there's a book I read that I'll talk about in a moment and give some insights that I learned from that. But since we recorded back in the fall, has your perspective changed, or what has changed about your perspective on the problem, which we kind of define the problem as hurry, busy, overwhelm, distraction that's like sucking the soul out of us as leaders? And so has anything changed for you since then?
For me, I feel like those were seeds that were planted that have kind of stuck in my mind. I am a lot more intentional about thinking about my time. I certainly still get sucked into the vortex of busyness and having to cram so much into the day, but I'm quicker to be able to pause. And I'm realizing how much more valuable the time is when I actually stop to rest and how much more refreshed and replenished I am. And so instead of going until I crash and burn, everything that we talked about really kind of put me in a different mindset. So that way I am more intentional about knowing when I might need to pause a little bit more.
What is the impact on you, your business, your family because of that?
I feel like I have a little bit more breathing room. And so my mind is a little bit clearer. I always feel like I have a million things jumbled in my brain. But when I pause, I'm able to sort through those things with a little bit more clarity. I think it gives me a little bit more direction on what is the next step, because I pause and stop and listen and kind of, instead of just rushing into the next thing, being really intentional about where I want to go. And I remember one of the first things that we talked about was to be a person who brings a peaceful presence.
Yes.
And I think part of our conversation about going into, you know, why are we so busy in this culture of hurry and this hustle culture really prevents us from being a peaceful presence. And I know I still have a very long way to go to be that on a regular basis, but I feel like when I'm able to stop and rest and play, I do have a little bit more of that peacefulness within me.
That's beautiful. You know, and as, since we've spoken about it, man, it's my passion and conviction around this problem has just become deeper. I ended up reading a book. I've read several books since then, but, you know, for those of you that go on the YouTube channel and watch this, there's a book, actually, it looks backwards when I'm looking at it, but, it's called Stolen Focus by Johan Hari. The subtitle is Why You Can't Pay Attention and How to Think Deeply Again. Now, for those of you that did listen to our season, you'll know that I'm a five, Enneagram five. And this guy like feeds that because he cites over 250 studies and details, and he's honest. He's like, look, not all these studies agree. There's different, conflicting information, but his concept was he went through this idea of, you know, why you can't pay attention, stolen focus, and what to do about it. And he explores a bunch of different causes to that. And, you know, he's very authentic and transparent, again, about the thoughts on this and some that conflict. And there's some of them, there's no real, you know, conclusion to some of them. And one of the things I walked away from his book realizing is that this is not solved individually. This problem that we're facing where we can't focus, we're not focusing, we're distracted, which leads to so many negative things, is not going to be solved individually. It's going to be solved socially. And it really, his part of what he says is he says it's going to take legislation in a lot of ways to get some of the companies that are designing software and hardware to, you know, steal our attention. He seems to think it's going to take some government intervention with that, but it's definitely going to be a society thing that we just all need to band together. And I've seen a lot of people, more books, more articles, more people just being more and more aware of how, you know, distraction is impacting them. And there was a few things I wanted to share from that, but I don't know if you had anything to add to that, Adrian, before I jump into sharing a few things that he said in his book.
Two thoughts. One is, as your passion has continued to grow and deepen and develop on this conversation, how has that impacted how you show up as a coach?
Oh, yeah. Pretty seriously. Right now, as I'm doing this, I used to have a keyboard like right in front of me. And I have two screens, and I would have lots of things going on the screens, and I'd be distracted by them. People would text me, and I'd be like pretending I'm paying attention. Can't believe I'm admitting this. And I would respond, but now I've got two blackout. My screens are still on in case for some reason we need to use them or whatever, but they're blacked out. I've got my notebook in front of me. I'm intentioning to listen with my eyes as best I can. And I took a training a few months ago that what I walked away from that with is the best gift you can give other people is your full unwavering presence. And in a world that we live in, I'm like, holy cow. And since I've really practiced that at a deep level with my clients, I'm hearing and intuiting things much deeper than I could have before. And it really is a gift to my clients and anybody that I do that with. I just got back from a weekend with the closest friends that I have, and we were all very present. In fact, one of the members of our group, we had to take their phone away, which they agreed to at the beginning of our time together. We were together for 3 days, and we put some parameters in place. But yeah, we were all intentional with our phones and all of that stuff. So that's how it's changed.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think you gave some practical tools on actual ways, tangible things that people can do to eliminate some distraction. Just like you said, you moved your keyboard out of the way, you blacked out your screens, you're just keeping one notebook in front of you. So finding those tools that work for you can really go a long way in helping to eliminate some of those distractions. And then also what you said about showing up and giving people your full attention. I know how I feel when I'm trying to talk to somebody and I know that I don't have their full attention, and it drives me crazy. And yeah, exactly. Like, are you actually listening to me? Hello, I have something to say to you. Right. So being so mindful about that. And I think when you can put those distractions aside and really show up for people, it also goes a really long way in building trust. And I'm also really mindful about how I am not good at doing that with my kids, of giving them my full attention. And so thanks for the reminder to remember what important humans they are and that they deserve my full attention to.
And that word human is really important. You know, as we speak, the real estate industry that I'm quite involved with is going through a very big change. And it, like, look, we've got, and part of the cry is like, hey, we have to get back to being human, like relating to people, you know, one-to-one and bringing human value. And that's, I think all of us, we're losing our souls. We're losing our humanity to distraction. And like Ready Player One is really a viable future for us, you know? And it's like, that's so sad. We have so much, such a gift to offer with our humanity. And, you know, Johan goes into that about, you know, stolen focus. Like one of his quotes that I pulled out of the book was, slowness nurtures attention, speed shatters it. It's like, oh, wow. We slowing down and being intentional about our attention is really important. We cannot keep our attention going well when we're just speeding through life. And he, in his one of his first chapters, he talks about how multitasking is a killer. And he says in three ways, right? And we discussed that on our episodes of multitasking really, you know, is not healthy. There are times where you have to do it. You can't avoid it in some cases. But when it comes to our daily lives, doing our best to focus on one thing is important. And he mentions the switch cost, going back and forth. There's a cost to that, right? It takes time away. You can't just go, usually can't go from one thing to another and back, and it's seamless. It takes time. You know, it also diminishes our ability, harms our ability to pay attention. That's a muscle. And the more we let it atrophy, the worse we get at paying attention. And it significantly impacts our creative ability. When we multitask, we can our ability to be creative and to think outside the box and to think clearly really suffers. He also mentions that the flow state is important, and we touched on that as well. But he continues; he goes deeper into that, and he spends time with Csikszentmihalyi, who's the guy, the Hungarian gentleman that we mentioned in our episodes. But he spent some time with him, talking to him about this stuff, and. You know, when he says that when he's starved of flow, stripped really of who we are, and when we don't have flow, we lose ourselves, and we've got to strip our just the distractions as best we can from it. Our flow state allows us to keep our attention and to really become more of who we are. And when we lose that flow sleep, it's really detrimental. And then one of the other things that I'm just going to touch on, there's so much more that he goes into with the causes, but sleep is another one. And I know we talked about that, but our society is not very conducive to sleep. And if anybody wants to learn anything more about sleep, just listen to or read anything by Dr. Matt Walker. I think he just came out with a new book, and I think that it would be really helpful to listen to him. I've spent a lot of time listening to what he says about sleep, and it's just fascinating. There's a lot of new studies and information that have come out about sleep in the last 10, 15 years that are really important. Since we recorded this, I've noticed, because I've been much more intentional, one of the reasons I wanted to record this whole season was to put my thoughts into usable form. And I've seen my clients benefit from this, right? And you know, as we've shared on some of the episodes that we have, self-awareness, growth, this whole process is not quick. And I've seen when they engage in what we refer to as rebellious acts, right? They become more aware. They're slowing down to process the deep change that happens when we give that. Another thing that author Johan talks about is that the power of reflection. And when we're distracted into, you know, oblivion, we don't give our minds the ability to reflect and wander. And that's when our brains start to make really good connections, right? That creativity is killed because we're not giving it that. And one of the things he cites is like a big concern for him is like, we've got some serious problems in our world to solve. I mean, we always have big problems to solve, but if we are not nurturing our ability to reflect, to be creative, to think of solutions, we're taking away the things that contribute to that mentally. How are we going to solve the problems that we have? And I think there's an opportunity for folks that really do protect that aspect of their humanness. I think they're going to have a really good opportunity in the future to impact the world.
And it's important to build those times into the day. right? So if that's something that becomes a practice, or people are wondering, okay, well, how do I slow down my thinking? How do I create space to muse, to ponder, to reflect? I have this concept of deep work time, and I encourage everybody on my staff to do it too, where, you know, choose a day of the week and block your calendar for however many hours feels right to you, 2 hours, 3 hours. Put a sign up on your door that says deep work, and people know that you're there, but you're not to be disturbed. And, you know, you can shut off your email at that point, but it's really intended to be time to work on bigger problems, to kind of sink your teeth into something that you haven't gotten enough momentum on. But the idea is, instead of constantly being interrupted throughout your day or moving from task to task to task, protecting some time where you can actually do that deeper creative work and thinking.
When you first introduced that, or it was first introduced, did people push back on it? Did they have to get used to it?
Absolutely. I had to get used to it myself, to feel like, oh, I'm blocking my day for 3 hours on this day. It felt a little bit weird, felt very uncomfortable. I do have people who don't do it, and that's fine for them. But there are other people who are like, oh, that's a great idea, I'm going to do it. So you have to figure out what works for you, what feels right for you. But if you're interested in trying to experiment and be more intentional with that space in your day or in your week or in your month, as having that time protected, set aside, blocked off, so that way it's purposeful in thinking through those problems, allowing yourself to think creatively.
Yeah, and it's not even just the flow aspect. I mean, that is very important. That's a huge part of it, but it's also a matter of getting the most important things done as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a book called The One Thing that I'm a huge fan of, and they talk about it from that they take the approach of productivity versus deep work. Right. And Cal Newport is, somebody I also read on digital minimalism. And he's got a book that precedes that called Deep Work. And like all of that, it's like, it's all pointing out to us like, hey, we've got to be intentional. It doesn't happen by default anymore. We've got to be intentional with that.
Yep.
So let's move on to surrender. Before we started recording, you were kind of sharing with me how surrender has showed up in your life. And I'm curious, maybe we'll start off with that and you can just have a little bit of a back and forth around our updates on surrender. What have we learned about that?
That word is always in the back of my mind now. And it comes up when I need to, I think. So for example, I feel like I've had some pretty good momentum the past couple of months with my coaching business. I'm pretty satisfied with the amount of workshops that I have on the calendar for the next month or two. And yet I feel like I don't have enough. Or why isn't this person getting back to me? Or why haven't I booked this client yet? And I have to remember, just surrender, hold it loosely, let it go. And almost every time, almost, not always, but almost every time I remind myself of that, something will bubble up. Somebody will get back to me. You know, one little forward step will be taken at that point. I'm an impatient person. I want to get done what I want to get done. And so when I have to wait on other people, it can be a little bit challenging for me. But I go back to Anne's conversation and surrender and just, you know, holding it with an open hand instead of a tightly closed fist. And it's a practice. It doesn't always feel good, but also just to let go of control of that sometimes can be really helpful. It's really just become a mindset for me.
Mm. I'm so honored that our conversations have made a deep impact on you, and they continue to make a deep impact on me as well. To I just shared that I was with these best friends in the world this past weekend, and I was kind of saying like, "Hey, I'm getting a little antsy for some things to come to fruition," and it's like, well, I've had a thought that the theme that I'm in, the stage I'm in, is kind of a soaking is the word that I've used for certain things. And somebody, without me telling them, was like, yeah, I get the sense you're in a soaking, you know, I didn't use that word, but they used it. And I was like, okay, that kind of confirms the season that I'm in. I just have to be patient and not control things and just go overboard. And yet for me, some things that have come up in conversations around this topic is the tension between action and surrender. And I know we were very clear that surrender is not giving up, right? Surrender is a relinquishing of control over things that you really don't have serious control over. And, you know, I think we, I just want to reiterate the balance between, you know, surrender and kind of the going too far and abdicating your responsibilities in a way. And so, you know, really surrender in the setting that, that I wanted to share, it was like, hey, when you get to a point where, like for me, I was very attached to what was happening. I wanted a certain outcome and that was realistically outside of my control. And it was detrimental the way that I was holding on to these issues. And when you find yourself being in that place, that's where it's like, okay, let me be aware of this and recognize this thing is owning me and I need to let go. It's almost like you've lost control to that thing in a lot of ways. It's the thing that's controlling you. And, you know, surrender and or acceptance is the way that we could say it is, really the goal is to gain non-attachment and to get to the place where you get half perspective, and without non-attachment or neutrality, it's just, again, it's difficult to get that perspective. That doesn't mean that you don't do anything, right? Even in your situation, in your example, Adrian, you are like, okay, you're doing things, you're moving, you're not sitting on the couch again, you know, doing nothing, you're doing things, but there's a line of, oh, let me not just overly control this. And the great thing is I hear this over and over and over with coaching clients. When you open your hands and you're like, okay, I'm just going to breathe and let what happens happens and accept it, magic happens. The universe, God shows up, right? Which is such a beautiful thing. I have a friend that was there this weekend. They have a project they're working on. Some people could look at it and say, you know, there's money, a lot of money involved. They could, you know, be, you know, a lot of people would be very intimidated about it, but there's no clear answer right now. And yet she's walking that line very, like, I'm just in awe. She's holding things loosely, but she's also doing things. She's taking steps forward until, you know, she's staying unattached to the outcomes. Like, well, if this happens, great. If it doesn't, that's okay too. And she's watching, she's paying attention, she's being aware of her attachment to the outcomes and holding it loosely. And I can't wait to see what happens, because either way, it's going to be amazing. And I have a feeling something's going to happen where a door is opened or something happens where it's just, okay, there it is. That's right. You know, and I think it's going to be a beautiful thing for her. So
that's going to be really fun to watch and observe and see what happens in that situation. For me, surrender has also become a little bit synonymous with patience. And I think you described it as acceptance or non-attachment. To me, patience is what comes back. And again, holding that line between being patient and taking action. So when I'm in these waiting spaces of, okay, I really am antsy to hear back from X client or to get, you know, this contract signed. When that's not happening, I'm real intentional about focusing on some of those higher level or more strategic things. Almost opens up a little bit door to my creativity. So I feel like, okay, well, if this client isn't getting back to me right now, what can I be spending my time on that is still productive and still moving my business forward? And so then that's when I start to ideate a little bit more, or maybe work on something that's a little bit more longer term while I'm waiting for more of the day-to-day action to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea, a friend of mine was talking about the idea of differentiation, you know, where it's like, hey, this is me and that's not me, right? So if you have an issue with somebody or something else is happening, it's like you don't internalize it. And I think for me, where that is most clear is with my wife or my kids. It's like if they trigger me or something, it's like, you know, in the past, it would have been I didn't differentiate between what was mine and what was theirs. And so, you know, a surrender comes into that of knowing, you know, being aware of what is me and what isn't me, which is really important. And I had several people kind of ask me to go into a little bit more detail on the steps of surrender. And I was thinking about it, and I don't know that this is all encompassing. I don't know that there's, you know, one, there's not one way to like go through surrender, but just a few thoughts on it from me. And I think about the steps that I went through. First of all, I was at the end of myself. And it doesn't have to be that way. Like you said, in your projects, right? There's a rhythm of it. It's like, I'm grabbing on too tightly for this. I'm aware of it, so I'm just going to step back. But for me, I had no concept of surrender or accepting what is. And I was crushed by it. So for those listening, don't get to that point. Take our input, take what we're saying and start practicing that awareness of when you're overly attached to the outcomes. But I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. I've got to let go. And I think one really important step I may not have covered or talked enough about was getting help, right? At that point, I sought coaches, I sought therapists, I sought help. And that is really, really important because when you're in a spot where you're overwhelmed, you're crushed, I was crushed, I needed outside perspectives, right? And if I were to add a practice to some of the practices that we talked about, Adrian, it would be coaching, which we'll get to in a bit. But I sought help. Then I because of the awareness that help allowed me to gain, I saw, hey, I see some blind spots. I didn't see all of them, but I saw a few and I started working on them and kept seeking to make them better, identified those changes. And as I identified more of those changes and worked on them, I saw other things. I also sought input from those who know and love me, not just like a coach or a therapist, but you know, my spouse, my best friends, you know, business partners, like, hey, when I was ready to hear it, I'll put it that way. Cause that wasn't in the early stages for me, I wasn't ready. But once I got to a place where I was ready, I'm like, okay, I'm on firm footing here for me. I can hear that. And listen, hopefully all y'all that are listening, you know, you start to practice this idea of acceptance and surrender so that you don't have to get to that point where you can consistently be in a healthy place. You can hear those things and cycle through, okay, what am I working on? What am I working on to surrender? What am I attached to both at a meta level as well as a micro level on a day-to-day or hourly basis. But yeah, I mean, it's the awareness, it's seeking the help that you need. And sometimes that may just be sitting down with a resource. The other day I had something happen at home and I was reflecting on it the next morning and I had a resource, an Enneagram resource that asked some great questions. And I identified some patterns in the house I grew up in that had bearing and impact on what happened at home. And that awareness allowed me to have a better conversation with somebody in my house that needed to have a conversation. And it helped me to know why and how I wanted to show up intentionally and not just by default. And so that reflection time, that awareness of surrender really helped me to kind of deepen that awareness, if that makes sense. So. Yeah. All right. I'm actually gonna arrange the order of this differently because as I was thinking through our season, tell me what you think of this, Adrian. I think if I were to do this over, I would put self-awareness after surrender. And here's why. Because without self-awareness, once you surrender, that kind of opens the door to a lot of growth. We went right into practices. I would suggest that self-awareness really would be the second step because without self-awareness, it's kind of hard to make those changes and to know what to change, what to let go of, what to surrender. And the practices then, once you understand self-awareness, which a great book called Why Emotions Matter, I might have mentioned it before, but John and Tristan Collins wrote it. They define self-awareness as the practice of seeing yourself more accurately. Then when you go into silent solitude, reflection, rest, community, coaching, that allows you to go more deeply into what I would refer to as self-mastery, which is a little different than self-awareness, which is self-mastery comes after self-awareness, and it's actually putting those, what you're aware of, into practice, right? So it's actually like the practicality of self-awareness. And so I would shift that to say, hey, I might put that second after surrender. What do you think?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you have to know who you are and have a deep examination of what's going on inside. Where's your head? Where's your heart? In order to know where you want to go, like you have to know where you're at starting point in order to know where you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Practically speaking, it's like, hey, self-awareness is when I get stressed. This is an example from my life. When I get stressed, I'm a jerk. And, you know, I need to be aware of that. So that's self-awareness. And the deeper aspect is, well, why? What causes me? What's the beliefs below that? the self-mastery would be like, okay, I noticed I'm stressed. So before I talk to my executive administrator or my wife or a child, I'm going to take a few moments to practice some breathing, some, you know, self-awareness, some presencing, right? Mindfulness, get to neutral. And then I go have those conversations, right? So that's, it's like, okay, self-awareness comes first, then self-mastery is putting that into practice.
Yeah. And that's some pretty basic coaching principles, starting with what, so what, now what, right? What's going on?
Right.
Okay. So what, what's my reaction? What is the manifestation of this? And now what? Now what am I going to do about it?
What are some of your regular practices around your self-awareness? And what are a few things that you do to make sure that you're continuing to develop that and move forward?
Yeah. You know, my home life and my personal life, or my home life and professional life, are different, where I feel like I'm much more open and less defensive when I'm addressing issues in a professional work environment, where at home I can be really defensive about my triggers and my shortcomings at home. And so for me at home, it's really truly checking myself when I want to be defensive. I'm a one, an Enneagram one. So that means if you tell me what I'm doing wrong, I probably already know. So don't tell me. I'm just going to bite your head off about it because I already know how I messed up. So my self-awareness continues to grow in my relationship with my husband to make sure that I am responding better, doing better at accepting, acknowledging those things. It's just a constant practice. And I'm really grateful that I have him to lovingly point those things out when I'm missing the mark at home. And I'm fortunate to have a really great culture with my staff at work where, you know, if there's issues, that we can talk about it and bring it up. And I think feedback is an important part of that too, being able to have healthy feedback circles at work too. So it's there. It really depends on what kind of healthy space I'm in as to how well I can deal with it in the moment or not.
Yeah. I think that's probably a common experience, you know, work versus home in a lot of, in probably many cases, especially if folks are leaders and whatnot. I think, you know, they probably are a little more comfortable being a certain way at work than at home in a lot of cases. And so, you know, I'd say that's, it's my experience as well. So you're not alone in that. Practices. Here's all I'll just reiterate. The practices that we outlined are crucial. They, especially in light of what I shared about the problem and Johann Hari and his book, creating that space for reflection, for solitude, for silence, you know, for rest, for community, those are so incredibly important. And, you know, you can't, coming back from the weekend that I just had, like we went to dinner on Thursday night. And if all of us had our phones on us, you know, we're all constantly looking at us, there's no way we would have had the depth that we had from a community standpoint. And so, you know, practicing those things and being intentional is really, really important. And the only other thing I'll add is I went on a silent retreat a few months ago. I'd been on silent retreats by myself, but this was a facilitated silent retreat with 12 other guys. And wow, in community, practicing that. And we had solitude times, right? We went off to our own spaces for a lot of it, but having that facilitated and then coming back together and hearing what everybody else was experiencing and what they were learning was really helpful and valuable. And so, you know, the practices aren't necessarily meant to be done all in, you know, isolation, right? Especially in, you know, involve community in the reflection time and, you know, and rest and things like that. So,
yeah. And I would also say, especially for people who are new to those practices, to start small, to choose maybe one that feels most doable. You don't have to do them all at once. Choose something that feels like it's actually attainable. See how it sits with you. See what it stirs up in you. Just do a little bit at a time to see what works for you. And I think it looks different from person to person. You know, what works for you, Chris, might not work for me. And what works for me is not going to work for the next person. But, you know, time of day, you know, whatever works for you, you really have to figure it out on your own. And then once you find something that feels good, just keep doing it. Try to figure out how you can make it a habit, because I think that those little gains is what's going to turn into what has a big impact.
Yeah. And I completely agree. And especially starting with the small stuff, I coach a lot of folks that are either threes, sevens, or eights on the Enneagram. Threes are the achievers, eights are the active controllers, sevens are the enthusiastic visionaries. And those three have a very hard time slowing down and focusing and being silent and quiet and alone, typically. Not all, right? But that's my experience in coaching a good number of them. And so for them, I had one coaching client who's seven, like just jump into something and try to do it like way more than, and I'm like, I let him fail, to be honest with you. And I was like, all right, let's do something that's a little more attainable here. And so like starting with 2 minutes of silence or 5 minutes, whatever that is, like just know that you don't have to go all in, even though you may think you want to, and that's how you may do a lot of things. It's not sustainable. Right. Just like New Year's resolutions tend to fail because people go way too far into it. So bite off, I would even say less than you think you can chew. Go smaller and just start with that and then develop it and build on it and get momentum from there. Just keep experimenting. If something doesn't work, just don't write off the whole practice. Just find ways that do work. And if you do know what your personality type is or your Enneagram is, reach out to folks who are similar. What do they do? If they do practice it, what works for them? Because that might work for you as well. So.
Yeah. And similarly, there's so many resources out there for Enneagram. I mean, just rich, deep wells of resources. So if you do know your Enneagram type, just do a little, go on the Google machine and see what are some practical suggestions that might work for your type to help you get there.
Or going another step and being a little more contemporary, go on an AI, ChatGPT.
That's right.
And ask them. Right. You'd be surprised what it would pull in those. They typically know Enneagram pretty well. So, all right, let's hit identity and then rule of life to kind of wrap some things up. Identity. So as I've discussed with folks and I coach people around identity, a lot of people name their roles first. And I just want to reiterate that this, your role is not your identity. And it takes some reflection to understand. It takes a good amount of reflection, right? Again, I said in several of our episodes, it took me years. And it's a living thing. My identity is always constantly shifting slightly, and my understanding of it and how it plays out. But I would say, you know, you have a decent grasp on your identity when it can be applied in all situations and roles in your life, from work to personal, and for the rest, and it can be applied for the rest of your life. Whereas like some folks, when they talk about their identity, it's like, I'm a parent. Well, not that being a parent, it never ends, but it definitely shifts, you know. And some people are like, oh, I want to get my kids into college. It's part of my identity. And it's like, well, that's a role and a goal that you have, but that's not your identity. And so it's something that can be applied for the rest of your life. And it deeply excites you and fires you up. You know, you can apply it everywhere. And, you know, it's something that you can't wait to get up in the morning to do. And if you're struggling with that, you've listened to our podcast and you tried to like look at what your identity might be, please reach out to me, reach out to us. I do have a process that we can employ and use and help you find that out. But it does take some time. And even though I know mine, I'm always, you know, applying surrender and an open hand to say, well, what might I not realize about my identity? How might it morph? So has your grasp on your identity moved at all? Because I know when we first started this conversation, you're like, at least I think if I remember correctly, you're like, I'm not really 100% sure. Like you have a little bit of a grasp of it, but has your concept or your thoughts around your identity changed at all or adjusted?
I think the biggest way that it has is being in constant states of transition. And so just being reflective and curious about how does my identity shift as life transitions happen. A small example is my oldest just turned 16. She has her license. We're all thrilled about it. For the past many years, a big part of my life has been driving her around, getting her from place to place, you know, being mom. Now that she's a little bit more independent, I'm trying to figure out who am I in relation to her independence. Now I still have two younger kids at home too. And so, you know, that's pretty, you know, stable. But with my oldest kind of developing this newfound sense of freedom, I'm thinking more about, wow, she's going to be in college in 2 years. And what does that mean for my role as mom then? And, you know, just what is my relationship to my kids, and how does that impact my identity and who I am, and also my relationship to my husband and my identity. And so, you know, I think whether it's transition with kids, transitions with partners, transitions with jobs or hobbies, just to be real reflective about how does your identity maybe shift in those transitions too. And I do a lot of kind of visualizing, you know, thinking about things, playing them through in my head and kind of trying on different things. And so, you know, when I think about this extra time that I might have now that I'm not spending 5 hours a day driving her places, you know, what do I want to do with that time? Who do I want to be? What is the impact I want to have on people around me? And so I think it's just, it's ever shifting. And it always goes back to that self-awareness and figuring out, who am I? Do I know who I am and how I'm showing up for people around me?
On one hand, that is
absolutely terrifying.
When your kid learns to drive, it is so
I am so grateful for iPhones and being able to tap a button and be able to see exactly where she is at any given moment. Like, wow, how did my mom do it? Like, right. Yeah. Like, okay, she's on her way home. Okay. She's where she's supposed to be.
And how fast they may have driven
before, but now when I know she's in the car, I'm checking. And so, yes, equal parts, exciting and terrifying.
Mm-hmm. You know, StrengthsFinder, you're very familiar with that. I utilize that in the process that I have to help people understand their identity, because your strengths play into that identity. So for me, you know, my identity, I've shared this before, there's two phrases, builder of constructs and teaching profit. And when I think about how I can apply that, like, I've got a few months left before my oldest goes off to college. And, you know, I have my next oldest, the two boys that are the oldest, the next youngest is 16. And so I'm like, okay, I'm being very intentional, not just for the next few months, but even as my older son grows, I want to bring that builder of constructs and teaching profit to bear with them and utilize that part of my identity. And my strengths are, I'm learner, analytical, responsible, developer, and self-assured. And so I want to bring all of that to bear on them in this stage for them, right? And so that's kind of how I think about our identities. Like, my role as a father, and I'm a father to two teenage boys, but my identity, how does that play into how I show up for them in this stage of their life? And then I have no idea what that's going to look like, you know, when my son goes off to college, and how much he's, you know, I just want to make sure that he understands, like, I want to help him. I want to be here for him. I'm really good at building constructs and frameworks and things to understand with. And I love teaching and sharing the information and wisdom I have so that he knows that, so that when he needs it, it's like, hey, I'm here. You know, it's part of who I am. I would love to share that with you. So, also, something that has to do with this, which is a little bit of a detour, is it's come up a lot in some of the reading I've been doing, which is stage of life. And there's been a lot of research, not lately, but some research lately, but it's something I've seen, like, over even going back hundreds of years of stage theory of stages of life, both spiritually and physically, and how, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, and I realize, like, there is a legitimate, like, when you hit your midlife, it's not just a cliche that there's a midlife crisis. Like, we really do go from a stage of, like, when we're first born. There's this one guy, Ronald Rollheiser, that I'm reading, in the middle of reading one of his books, and he talks about the stages of life. And of course, when we're first born to when we hit teenager or you know, puberty, that's a stage. But then we hit puberty, we want to separate from our family and establish our own home and build something. And that usually, you know, I'm sure you can break that down into smaller stages, but he says, you know, through your 30s into maybe your early 40s, you're building this home and you're active and you're going and getting it done. But then somewhere you start to realize that's not everything it's cracked up to be. And you start to kind of pull back, which is kind of where I've been and where this whole podcast has come out of. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not what I thought it would be. It's not going to give me everything I thought it would. So let me kind of step back. And that's where you don't, he talks about not having the energy to hold off some of the fears and the programming and the detrimental beliefs that you have, and they start to bubble up, and you're like, man, why is this coming up now? I'm 40 something years old. And like, for me, knowing that is a legitimate stage of life, that like there's theory, there's things around it. It's not just me. I had breakfast with a friend a few weeks ago that he's a few years, you know, he's a little younger than me, and he's going through some things. And I'm like, dude, let's keep talking because I can help you with this. Don't go it alone. This is not just you. This is common. Now let's walk through this, you know, together. And so I think that helps in understanding like where we're at and how all of these things fit into it. All right. Rule of life. One of the biggest things for me is, as I've continued to use it, it was fairly new to me 6 to 9 months ago. As I've continued to use it, it's been extremely helpful for me to keep me going in the direction of who I want to be, right? I definitely feel like 6 months ago, I have less stress. I have more peace than where I was before, more intentionality. You know, a lot of things have become easier in a way. You know, things don't bother me nearly as much because I've been following this rule of life that I've crafted for myself. One of the biggest things I want to share with everybody is that it was originally developed to be communal, not individual, which is interesting because when you think about living out a rule of life with other people, it can get interesting, right? If I value one thing and somebody who's more of an extrovert values something else, you know, that can be some tension there. And it was really originally developed in a spiritual community, like the monks and monastic communities, way back in the day. And so I think as a leader, if you think about developing a rule of life for your business, that's where some things can, and you're talking about culture, you know, who are we going to be? And that's where, if you apply it, not just to yourself as a leader, which I think is extremely valuable, but then you start to think about like, hey, what would a rule of life look like for my business? There's an organization called Praxis that has a rule of life for entrepreneurs, and it is spiritually focused, but they have 6 areas. And one of them is time. Another one is power, which is really interesting to think about. Like, how do you utilize power, especially as a leader? You know, do you lord it over people, or do you kind of come from a servant approach? And also time, like, are you respectful of your employees' time? Somewhere in Europe, I want to say France, I think they passed a law that, like, this is probably 5 or 6 years ago, that it is illegal for the business to actually try to get somebody like to work. Like, you can't just call somebody up after hours and say, I need you to work on something. It was like they passed a law that it was illegal. And I'm like, wow, that's just unthinkable in the US that we would do that. But, you know, having a rule, that's part of a rule of life culturally that they all agreed on, that whoever was in power passed a law that that was the case. And so, it's communal. And I think applying it to a whole business can be something that can be very powerful, especially from a cultural standpoint.
And can you remind us overall, I know we talked about the categories of the rule of life. What were your 4 or 5 categories that kind of fall within your rule of life?
My rule of life is spiritual and rest, which are inward facing. And then relationships and livelihood were the outward facing ones. So, you know, those don't have to be yours. Like the Praxis one, they have 6 and they're very different from that. You know, but going through the process that we outlined in several episodes is really helpful to determine like what are the major areas of your life. And I do think it's helpful to think as an individual anyway, what are the outward facing ones? What are the inward facing ones? And then what are the practices or values that go in each one of those? But a similar process can be had or applied when you think about it from an organizational standpoint.
Yeah. And from an organizational standpoint, maybe a different way to think about it too, is what does success look like for you? Because it might not be monetary. It might be protecting your free time. It might be relationships, but really thinking about if you're going to create this rule of life, maybe using that as a guiding question too.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do that as an organization, definitely reach out to me. I can help. But start with core values and beliefs. Your purpose should come next if you don't have these things. And then this is called the Collins Peross Vision Framework. And you know, it can be found in Jim Collins' book, Beyond Entrepreneurship 2.0. But once you have core values, beliefs, your purpose, which doesn't really ever change, and then your mission, which is if you applied or lived your purpose at a really purposeful, excellent level, what would the results look like in 3, 5, 10 years from now? Once you have that, then you can create a rule of life, because the rule of life would be based on all of that. Like, how do you want to show up? Like, do you want to treat your employees with, you know, incredible dignity and make sure that they have a good balance, that they're not getting burned out, that they have specific work hours that they work and time off? Like, I'm in the real estate world, and one of the things we talked about at dinner on Thursday night was, how could you implement a day of rest in the world of real estate? What would that look like? We didn't have any solid solutions, but it definitely would take a community effort, maybe starting with a few individuals to make that happen. So if for some reason you're listening to this and you haven't listened to our previous episodes, definitely go into that, because go listen to some of those episodes, because we go into a lot of detail. I think Phil Carnuccio does a great job of because he's had a rule of life. He's implemented it into his organization. He runs a church for the last 15 years. He's a wealth of information and experience around that. So please listen to those when it comes to self-awareness. Please listen to Diane, our interview with Diane. She goes into a lot of really great detail around that. We've got for Surrender, we've got Ann Weaver, who's a spiritual director. Please listen to that. And then Identity, Jamie Winship, is a great episode to go back and listen to around that, because he's lived this for 27, 30 years, and he is employing it at a very high level and understands it very deeply. So with that said, Adrian, I want to ask you, what would your encouragement be for folks as they've listened? Let's say they listened to the whole season. What would their next steps be?
Yeah, I echo the community piece. I believe we talked about the personal board of directors at some point during our season 2. And so making sure that you have those people in your network supporting you, lifting you up, encouraging you when things get tough, that's a huge piece of it. The second thing I would say is to experiment with pausing, whatever that looks like. If it's just an hour a week, an hour a day, finding that solitude, finding that quiet space where you can exhale, have some breathing room, allow your mind to wander, whether it's for a walk or sitting in a chair or meditating, whatever that looks like to you. If you just start small by pausing, it's kind of like putting your own oxygen mask on first. You can't give to others what you don't have for yourself. And so if you're just feeling kind of like you're scraping the bottom of the barrel, I think you need to be reflective and think about, how do you start to fill yourself up a little bit more? And the community piece can be a big part of that, but also being intentional and protecting a little bit of quiet space in your schedule is important too.
I do that, and I've been doing it, and it is still difficult in the middle of a busy day to do that. So don't feel like you're alone.
Yeah. And sometimes I will go a whole week or multiple weeks and be like, oh, I haven't really slowed down for a while. But every time I do, I just feel like, oh, why don't I do this more often?
Yeah. And it could just be as simple as, like, just set a timer for 2 minutes and just breathe. That's it. That's all you got to do. Start from there. My pauses in the middle and the end of the day are literally 2-3 minutes at this point. And I've been doing this for a while. So again, please don't feel like, you know, either one of us on this podcast do it for 30 minutes in the middle of the day. That's not the case. So I have grown to a point in the morning. I can do what's centering prayer and listening prayer for 10 minutes, where it's just, I'm silent. I'm just trying to quiet my thinking and center my thoughts and attention. 10 minutes. That's what I'm up to after like six to nine months. So don't feel that bad. My encouragement to folks as next steps would be to reach out and attend one of the free open discussions or coaching sessions that I am going to be doing on Tuesdays from 4 to 4:45 p.m. Eastern. I'll put some information on our website about that, about how you can join and register for that and show up to those. Just anybody can come. You can ask questions, you know, present challenges you have. I'll probably have a topic that we'll focus on if nobody has any real questions every week. But that's my that's what we're going to be doing starting in a few weeks here in April. And find somebody to help you with these things, because going it alone is not the way to do it. You've got to do these things. You got to make these changes. You got to apply these things in community. And without community, it's so much harder to do it. And so whether it's a coach, whether it's a community of people who want to, you know, employ the same things, do it in community, right? And so if you need a coach, reach out to us. We'd be happy to discuss that with you. And, you know, if you're interested in learning more about your strengths, Adrienne is a certified strength coach facilitator. She's excellent at that. Please reach out to us if you want to know more about your Enneagram. Either one of us can jump into that. If we also do that with teams, help teams to understand their makeup from an Enneagram standpoint and strengths finder wise. So there's a lot of opportunities. Let us know like where you want to grow, because by having a coach or a community to plug into, that's going to help accelerate your growth. All right. Any last thoughts, Adrienne, as we wrap this up?
No, it's been great doing this and exploring these ideas with you. I hope that some of our discussions are helpful to the listeners and that they are able to take it to heart and just get curious about who they are and where they want to go.
Agreed. My last exhortation, everybody, is please become a rebel. Please push back against the problem of this world and that it wants to take your soul. There are big forces with billions of dollars out there that are trying to do that. Your life, your family, your career, your purpose on this earth deserves for you to say, not me, screw you, I'm opting out. And that's okay if it looks like small steps, like 2 minutes a day that you're pausing, that's totally fine. But please understand, as a leader, the world needs you to show up. Your business, in my opinion, should be used for redemptive purposes to make the world a more whole and healthy place. And in order for your business to do that, you as the leader have to be working towards that. And so it's incredibly important. So please do that. Reach out to us. If you have more questions or want help, we're here for you. Thanks, Adrienne. I really appreciate your partnership on this season. And it was an honor. It really was.
It was. Thanks, Chris.
And that's a wrap for season one. I want to extend my heartfelt gratitude to you for dedicating your time to listening to our episodes. You know, with all the choices you have, it truly means the world that you've tuned into our podcast. So please join me on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern for my free hour of coaching, training, and discussion, and I would be thrilled to meet you. You might be wondering, what's next for the Overflowing Life podcast? And at this moment, I'm not entirely sure. I have a few ideas, but none of them have really landed yet, so keep an eye out. I'd love to have something out by summer 2024, and if there's anything you'd like to hear more of, feel free to reach out. Again, thank you so much for faithfully listening. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Overflowing Life. If our message struck a chord with you, please subscribe and connect with us. Share your thoughts, questions, and stories with us on Instagram at The Overflowing Life or visit theoverflowinglife.com. And if you're looking for coaching that helps you create an overflowing life, please reach out to us. We'd love to partner with you. Are you still here? What are you doing? Music's over. Season's over. It's time to go home. I'll see you on Tuesdays. Bye.